Hour 2 of Canuck Central. Coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Satyar Shah and Bick Nizar. We are going to be joined by Brett Festerling coming up in just a moment. And keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. If you missed the first hour, check it out on the podcast. We talked about me not choking on whatever I was chewing on between the break. But we talked about Nils Höglander, top six forward. And we power ranked the Canucks top six. And we chatted with Ken Danico. And let's welcome in our good friend. We chatted with him last night, calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor, 4-3 overtime loss against the Carolina Hurricanes. And like Tyler asks to our text inbox, Brett, he says, so 2 hours out, over 2 hours out, how is Brett feeling about the effort the Canucks Stars gave?
It was okay. I think you could tell by Tocchet's post-game that they had a game plan going in, and they didn't execute it very well. That's the biggest thing I took away from the way Tocchet talked about it, is they knew exactly what Carolina was going to bring and what they needed to do to beat that, and they didn't execute it, and they didn't trust that if they stuck to it that it would come through. So not the best effort by them. I think it is a feel-good point. It's nice that they got that, but it'd be nice to get some regulation wins at home for sure.
I'll lead you off with what we started the show with today, just talking about Nils Höglander in the top six. And we had this reply here. We posted the video on social media, and Matt replied about, is Nils Höglander a top six forward? And he said, with the right complementary players, maybe. I think where he fits best is the non-matchup line like Sprong. But just in general, when it comes to, you know, evaluating and identifying a top six player, should we have to squint to look at it and be like, oh, I think I see a top six player, especially on a team that's trying to have championship aspirations right now? You know, Garland right now is performing at a level where it looks like a top six player. Besser, Miller, you know, Patterson historically would obviously be a top six player. DeBrusk, you know, there's chances there and there is effort there. It just hasn't converted. Looks like a top six player. When it comes to Höglander, do you feel like you have to do the squint eye test and be like, yeah, maybe in the right environment? Or should a top six guy just be stapled on, bona fide? It looks obvious.
I don't know, it's such a tough question, and I think it's evolved over the last, really since Vegas came in, to me, to the lineup. They went way more just depth throughout the lineup, four lines coming at you, and I feel like it's a copycat league, and you see a lot of teams going more towards that model. So, you know, when I played, it was bona fide superstars. It was your top six were the guys that made the most money. It was the Solanis, Prongers, Perrys, Getzlaffs, you know, Bobby Ryans, Koivus, those guys. So now, if it is Höglander a top six, I mean, in the perfect world, probably not. He's probably a third line guy, and I think he's a very good player, and I think he has a lot of value on this team and can make it better. But has this team had a solid top six in the last 3 years?
Yeah, no.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we look at their top six, there's always felt like there's been a guy short, mm-hmm. you know. And last year they went out and got Lindholm. The year prior to that, we were talking about what can they do to add to the top six. And this year, I think what we're trying to explore, and Dakota Joshua is going to come back, is do they have enough internal options here for true top six forwards? And we're only 8 games into the season, right? But I think there are enough options. It's just about which one of these players will seize it, because we've seen Garland kind of seize a legit top six spot this year.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. I guess to me, it's just like what line, what group of three guys, what line wants to take the bull by the horns. I feel like it becomes a bigger question mark, because we're always naturally going to put Petey in there, which he should be there. And obviously we're paying him like it and he's there. But the big question mark for the last 2 years is there a line there put together? Is there a solid line that's a second line that goes around PD that's still the hole? We're still looking for wingers. So, I mean, I don't know. I would love to see maybe if Joshua comes back with Garland and do PD that way and see if those guys, that's elevating Joshua again, and then you get into the same argument. So to answer your question, I'm not sure, but I think they have the depth to do it. This depth looks great this year, and I like that. It's just what combinations do you figure out and what kind of ice time do you give those combinations.
Was it a bit harsh last night for Hoglander and seeing the kind of rug pulled out for him today, that, you know, Baines is skating on that role and that opportunity, you know, he gets a little bit of spell there and he scores a goal, has an assist last night, but in general, it feels like a quick rope right now on that six forward, whether it's Sprong or Hoglander in the spot now.
Yeah, that's definitely a quick rug pull. I mean, I feel like Hoglander is one of those guys where if the coach isn't doing that stuff, he doesn't like you, you know? It's kind of like he likes you because he's doing that. It's tough love a bit. I think Hoglander's had a pretty good start to the season. He's been in shape. His tenacity has been great. Him and Garland have worked well. It was a quick switch last night, which makes me think that talked to him about something specific and then he didn't do it. That's usually when you get those quick rug pulls, when you've watched video and you've worked on something, whether it's back checks or identifying guys, and you miss those assignments or you lose a battle that he thinks you shouldn't have. So I'm guessing it was more specific to certain plays that Hoglander messed up last night that he did it. But then Baines has played really well last, you know, two or three games. I think he's played really well and showed some skill and some effort. And we know Tockett's not afraid to reward the depth guys when they're pulling the rope and doing everything he asks. He rewards them by moving them up the lineup.
Well, and I know a lot of fans are already very impressed by Daniel Sprong, and he had a good game last night. He's put together two good games, but he's also been healthy scratch three games, and he's such an aesthetically pleasing player when you watch him. Like, he looks like, you know, just a really cool hockey player. He's got speed, he's got pace, he's aggressive, he takes guys one-on-one. I mean, he looks like a guy who should score, you know, 30, 40 goals in the NHL, but he just doesn't find himself in those prominent roles. And I know people want him to move up the lineup, but what do you think the best approach is with him in terms of trying to, you know, find consistency and also get the details up to a certain level? Do you wait for that to kind of really come around before giving him more minutes, or do you give in to the temptation and give a guy like that more minutes?
Yeah, it's hard not to. He looks so good with the puck. You're right. From the eye test, he looks so smooth, and you see him burn wide with the puck last night. He helps create Baines' first goal of his career the same way. Speed out of the neutral zone looks great, takes guys one-on-ones, creates chances. So I think that's part of it, is most people are going to see him when he has the puck, and he looks really good with the puck. So the problem is his game away from the puck isn't where Tockett wants it, and you can see it when you – offensive players like that, they usually don't stop as much. They want to keep the speed. They want to keep the momentum. That's where they get that edge. They want to cheat a little bit. He does that. He's really good at it. That's what makes him really good on the offensive side, or part of it. I think Tockett just wants to reel that a bit in, or just have him a little more aware of the situations he's in. They're going to need that down the stretch. You know, if you got a guy that can break things open like that, you won't. For sure, but I think he just needs to reel in the game away from the puck a little bit. Now, do you reward him? He's played really well. So I maybe that's like something where Hoglander moves down, but you find two guys that are offensively gifted that can kind of feed off each other and have fun. That's exactly what I think happened with Bluger, Garland, and Joshua last year. They kind of had these three guys that they didn't really know where they fit, and then all of a sudden this line's connecting. And they look like they're having fun out there every shift, and they still are when you see those guys together. So do you reward them with more ice time? I don't know, but definitely give them some opportunities. I think he's proven he can play with the puck. So I like watching him out there. I think he can make a difference, and we've seen it in the last two games.
That's the thing I really enjoy about it is he like makes mistakes, but he makes ambitious mistakes with the puck. Like, he has one intent when he's on the puck, or even when the Canucks are in the offensive zone. It's, how do I get the puck into the dangerous area? Whether I gotta, you know, activate and go right at a guy or get a shot off. And there's always a purposeful intent with Sprong, and I'd rather see a player make ambitious mistakes than make the safe play over and over again, which doesn't necessarily create for others necessarily.
Yeah. But when he gets the puck, you know what he wants to do. He wants to go create or score a goal or take somebody one-on-one, and he gets into it. Sometimes that does backfire.
Sure.
Because he'll do it all over the ice.
Yeah.
But when he does get that wide move on his blue line, and then he's the one creating that odd man rush. It looks great. So I agree with you 100%. I do like that, and that goes into Tocchet's team system, supporting each other and having each other's back when that happens. And I think when you do see more of that trust, which are probably lacking a bit now, those will be covered a little better, and you'll have guys protecting those guts, as Tocchet would say.
Yeah, and as far as the back end is concerned, one player who we spoke so highly about last year, so often, Brett, was Carson Soucy, and he had a terrific first season, only played 40 games, and we bemoaned the fact that he could have been more useful to the team had he been healthier, but he played about 17 and a half minutes a game. So far this year, he's playing about 19 minutes and 20 seconds, but his game hasn't quite been at the level that we saw last year. Like, we know there's a better player there. Is it simply just, hey, him just not having that level yet, or is it adjusting to playing a bigger, more meaningful role with the team?
Yeah, I think it's everything in terms of, there's a bigger role there. He's logging more ice. He's expected to do more. I think there, last year was figuring out what he could do. And then when you have success, it just kind of breeds some confidence. Right now, the back end doesn't look as confident as probably if you get away from Hronek and Hughes. I'd say those four are more up in the air and a little less confident. Susie's been okay. He's had games where he struggled and he's had some good plays, but I think it's just a confidence one thing. Simplify. I mean, Bick and I talk about this a lot, but it's D-man can always simplify, especially big guys, and that usually just leads to faster plays, and then from there you can build out. So I think he has more in him. Has he played his best this year? No, but again, a valuable piece that I think when that team structure and trust gets back to where it needs to be, you'll see his game improve with it as well.
We've chatted a bit about that too, because he and Myers were so effective come playoff time. And, it didn't look so great at times during the regular season last year and this so far this year. Is there something to be said about just the tempo of playoffs versus regular season?
In terms of
just the environment of how everything is ticked up and why some guys thrive so much in the playoffs versus a December game in Minnesota or something like that.
Yeah, it's way different. It's night and day in terms of the intensity, how fast it happens, and I think that feeds into the big guys if they keep it simple, because everything comes to you faster. You have a longer reach. You can be physical. It's wearing. So. Yeah, I mean, you see the separation. You see kind of the cream rise when the playoffs start there.
And especially for guys, like the Canucks clearly are trying to be better on their breakouts. They're trying to do some different things. And as much as Soucy and even Myers, to maybe a lesser extent, but both guys move the puck fairly well, but are somewhat limited with what they can do with the puck. Can an adjustment with breakouts make it a little bit harder for a guy like that to adjust and be a bit cleaner in the exits?
Yeah, for sure. Like different adjustments, especially. I mean, I think this goes back to that diesel instruction. You can tie strong into it with just stopping and being simple. Whereas if those big guys do make a mistake in last year's system or when they have the trust and it squirts out to the neutral zone or into the slot, there's a centerman there to cover, a winger there to cover. Whereas this year you've seen guys like Sprong or whoever miss their assignment, and then that kind of throws a magnifying glass on the D and the bad play, where that was kind of protected in those layers and in that system last year. So I a lot of the problems, whether you pick the forwards, whether you pick D, and I'm not saying there's a lot of problems, but where they can improve is just, it comes from that trust in that system. That's really a lot of the frustration you heard in Tocchet last night, which is trust in the structure and the system that they had so much of last year, really live and die by it. But trying to add more of that rush game you're talking about and be more explosive out of that is just you're gonna have to find that happy medium of when to go and when not to go, because that's taking more risk in those areas up, and that's what we're seeing with some of these goals again.
It's funny because they have the eighth best points percentage right now, right? Which you'd be thrilled about so far through eight games in the season, and yet I don't know if we've seen their best game.
We haven't seen the best out of how many of their individuals have we seen the best out of to begin with, right?
So at what point, Brett, do you start to just wonder if we get to game 14, game 17, game 21, where we haven't seen the best game? And I think maybe that's part of Rick Tocchet's ire last night, where he was so vocal and being willing to call some guys out that we haven't really seen their best game. Even though they've had some success, it might be masking some of the bigger issues.
Yeah, maybe. I think that was one of their strengths last year, was they didn't necessarily have to have 20 guys on their A game.
Right.
They had 20 guys playing the same game, and that just led to an overall success, and it gave guys room to find their game and have that success and be patient with it a little bit. I think it's just exposed more when they don't have that going, and if they don't have all 20 guys pulling in the right direction, then your nights like last night where you probably didn't see a lot of the big guys stand out, it really becomes apparent.
Well, yeah, and we heard the coach mention towards the end that the bad habits can lead to a 4 or 5 game losing streak, and sometimes coaches have a sixth sense with these things, so they can see what could happen if you don't fix things. And I think that's the one thing we're keeping an eye on is, like, hey, they're overcoming ways, you know, overcoming some obstacles to pick up points along the way, and they've been fine to start the season, but they're not as clean defensively as last year where they could rely on the structure, like you said. And I think that's maybe where his fear is, right? That unless we fix the structure quickly, we're not going to have that to fall back on.
Yeah, and games are the tip of the iceberg. It's what you see, but they see it every single day in practice and work habits and just how crisp and clean those practices are. You can go on, and this happens all the time, you can go on 10-game winning streaks and you're cruising, but you can feel it in practice. It's not crisp. It's not clean. Morning skate guys are sloppy, and you can just feel that kind of bar lowering and that standard kind of deteriorating, and you know what's coming, and that's usually what leads into 4, 5, 6 game losing streaks because it just kind of snowballs. So yeah, the fact that he mentioned that they had a plan, they didn't stick to it, mentioned trust last night, makes me think that some of those standards in practice might be slipping, or maybe that trust in what they're doing might be slipping a little bit, and he wants to get on top of it and get guys back in on the same team pulling in the same direction here.
Brett, always a pleasure, man. We appreciate your time. It was fun talking to you last night, too, from the rink, and hopefully we'll be chatting again very soon.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
And that is Brett Festerling, color commentator and also analyst here with us on Sportsnet 650. And that's the thing that stood out to me the most. I know we talked about the Hoglander stuff, and even he stopped himself on Pedersen. We talked about this last night on the post-game show too. It's like he was about to say something about Petey and just said, hey, I don't want to focus on that line. So he had something locked and loaded. But that part at the end is what really made me think. And I thought about it a lot last night too. And I don't want to, you know, make the show about, are the Canucks about to lose 4 or 5 in a row? But coaches do have a sixth sense, and we call it a sixth sense because we don't see everything going on behind the scenes, but they do. So they have a good indication of what they see and how they feel about things. And I'm not saying he's been stressed, because he wasn't stressed today when he met with the media. He's been overall pretty positive about things. But you can see the concern a coach has about the staples and identity that they saw last year not being imparted quite yet. And the longer that takes, the less confidence you're going to have that you can overcome some bad performances, overcome some obstacles, because at some point your bad habits get the better of you. And the Canucks don't have a lot of bad habits, but they've had some poor breakdowns. They haven't been as good protecting the middle of the ice as they want at times. They've given up some bad rush chances at times as well. These are things that they did a lot better last year, have to improve. And you can tell the coach is legitimately concerned about the trend so far.
Yeah, because I think at least have a peak performance. It doesn't have to sustain for 7 games or anything
Well, last year they had it in the first game against Edmonton.
Yeah, they had an 8-1, they had a 5-0, and they had a 10-1 in the early going of the season by November 2nd.
Yeah.
Those are some pretty high-profile games all of a sudden. And so far this year, they haven't really provided that, you know, 60-minute game. It's a huge cliche, but I'm not saying they have to do it every single night, but just for a certain level of validation for the coaches to say, okay, this is trending in the right direction. What we're working on, what we're trying to implement is following through. And, you know, that's why, like, the buy-in was really interesting, that comment yesterday, because, you know, the game plan was provided. All the things that they capitalized on, the Hurricanes, was provided, and it wasn't executed.
Well, and last year he praised them on executing game plans well. And they did. And that's the thing he kept mentioning. It was about buying into the game plan. And he mentioned, we've been giving the guys information. They just have to do the right things about it. He was talking about the game plan specifically when speaking about that. And
like realistically, what's been their best performance of the year?
The Florida win?
It's either the 3-2 Florida win or the 3-0 Philly win. And I would probably say the Florida one just because of the degree of difficulty.
Yeah, exactly. I know they had Tkachuk and Barkov out, yeah, but still, you're playing a team that's got off to a really good start so far this year.
Yeah, and look, they put up a 6th spot on Chicago. They also gave up 3 goals in that game.
Yeah, they had some moments that weren't great. But, I mean, it's, again, they're playing teams they should beat. I mean, those are good things. But to me, signature performances are you're beating good teams convincingly.
And we're talking about a 3-2 OT win.
And this isn't, again, like, we're not trying to make this into, oh, the Canucks are in trouble, they're playing really bad, or I'm worried about them. It's just, again, evaluating what we've seen so far and what the coach was saying, I don't really have big concerns. Like, if anything, my take is pretty positive, because I think what we've seen so far through 8 games, and you were saying this to Brett, they're sitting here with 11 points through 8 games, and they haven't even played anywhere near their best hockey individually nor as players. And over the course of an 82-game season, they're not going to stay like this. They are going to get better. Individuals will get better. So I don't think we have any indication what the ceiling of this team is, but it is significantly higher than what we're seeing right now.
And from the coach's perspective, you know, just show me what the best looks like for at least one game, so it looks like we're trending in the right direction.
For sure. Now, you know, this question, and it's fair, it says, why hasn't the structure been there if most of the players are the same as last year? They do have a lot of the same players, but they also have some new players.
So, and it's 9 new faces.
And also with the forward group, and if you look at some of the mistakes the Canucks have made, it's been a lot of the forwards making mistakes. And I think the defensemen, we've talked about Soucy and Meyer so far. They've had some struggles, and I don't think it's them not playing to their staples. It's just they haven't closed out as well as they normally do, and I think that's part of kind of what's gone wrong, so to speak, so far for the team. But there are a lot of things I think they can do better and will do better very, very soon. All right, keep your thoughts coming into the text inbox, and we'll discuss as the show goes on. We have Kirk McLean joining us next on Sportsnet 650.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans. The People's Show with Bick Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.